From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been about a month since the federal farm bill expired. This is a law that Congress renews roughly every 5 years. It sets policies and funding for food, farm, and conservation programs. And for a long time now, it's also funded the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which helps people with low or no income pay for food. Democrats and Republicans have significant differences on the legislation. For example, some Republicans want climate change provisions stripped from it and food assistance handled separately. And it did not help that the U.S. House of Representatives was effectively paralyzed for 3 weeks while Republicans were casting about for a new leader. Meanwhile, on actual farms across Illinois, the harvest is winding down. Personally, I drove 178 miles on back roads through Illinois farmland this past Sunday, and it seemed like there was very little left to be done. So joining us now to talk about all of this, what it means for farmers and consumers, we're joined now by Jonathan Kappas. He is an associate professor in agricultural and consumer economics at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program. Jonathan, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Brian. It's good to talk to you again.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, if you have a question about the farm bill or an observation about this year's harvest, anything farm related today, you can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We'll be speaking with Jonathan Kappas about the farm bill for about the next 14 minutes or so. All right. I'd like to start with some basics on the farm bill. We had a conversation on this about a month ago, but maybe we can go even sort of bigger picture today. And why the farm bill is the way it is, why it's this become this political football. Maybe we can just start with a brief overview of some of the specific policies that the farm bill sets.
Yeah, and it's, as you mentioned, it's become more of a partisan issue, particularly in the House, in the last, 10, 15 years. The farm bill really has built up over 90 years. The first time Congress did it passed the farm bill had been 1933 during the New Deal and the Great Depression. They added the food stamp program in 1973. So that really built a coalition from the farm interest all the way into, the cities and suburbs and towns where low-income individuals needed food assistance. And then we really added the conservation environmental piece to it in 1985. So that sort of those three kind of interest areas for a farm bill is what really gives it its political power, the broad coalition of interests that want to support it. But it also means that maintaining that coalition can be difficult. So that's where we're seeing a lot of the partisanship play into the farm bill. And most of the time it's built around how to cut spending, what programs should be eliminated or reduced so that spending outlook or spending projections are decreased. And then when that becomes the focal point, then a program like the SNAP program, which serves over 40 million Americans and helps put food on the table in those households, that spends a lot of money. 40 million Americans getting food assistance can top $100 billion a year in spending. And so you can see this sort of budget pressure on the coalition, which tends to tear things apart and cause a whole lot of problems, which we've seen the last two farm bills in the House, where that kind of dynamic played out. And the farm bill initially was defeated on the House floor both times because the votes weren't there to pass it.
Why does it expire every 5 years? Why this political countdown bomb in our politics? Why not just set a farm bill and say, wipe our hands and maybe we'll deal with the appropriations year by year as needed?
Well, there's not a great clear answer to that. It's kind of a tradition. Part of the reasoning or justification for it is this requires the committees to reconsider the bill, reconsider the policies. So if you think about setting, farm risk and support programs, you want to come back and look at them on some sort of reasonable time frame to make sure they're working and to adjust them to new realities and keep them up to date with what's going on. It's also political. It requires Congress to go back into it. That gives everybody a chance to, rev up the interest machines and try to get changes or reforms. And this sort of expiration provision then requires some action by Congress so it doesn't just kind of linger or expire and nobody does anything with it. And so you can see in a paralyzed Congress, it does have a bit of a forcing mechanism to get Congress to work on it, even if it the question, you know, what, how effective that is right now is becoming increasingly questionable.
I was going to say, yeah, we've seen so many forcing mechanisms in American politics fall by the wayside in this current moment we're living in. And maybe we can come back to that toward the end. Let's talk about some of the real world effects. If, you know, this, if the fight continues to go on here, and this would not be the first time if it takes a few months. I mean, that's become more norm for the recent farm bills. But what are some of the consequences that both farmers and consumers can start to see in their lives if this thing lingers, if this fight lingers on?
Well, I think the biggest thing we're looking at is the farm support programs that you know, paid farmers if prices are low, mostly. Those would expire into the next year. And the first one that really is an issue is the dairy program. And so there's a concern and a bit of a threat that the dairy policy for the country could revert back to the 1949 Act provisions, which are as antiquated as they sound and would just be extraordinarily disruptive in the dairy and milk markets. Now, I'm pretty skeptical about whether USDA could actually implement that kind of policy and make it work. I mean, it's so outdated as to be, it would be horribly disruptive. You'd have the federal government buying milk products at extremely high prices, which could interrupt, you know, could really impact the price of milk in the grocery store and cheese and everything else. And so it's hard to imagine that actually going into effect and having that kind of disruptive impact on the market. And on consumers in the grocery aisles. But the risk is there. And the more we see this Congress not able to function on some pretty basic, you know, operational things like a speaker, the more that risk grows and the greater the concern is that somebody at USDA is going to have to start to figure out what to do with that 1949 Act set of provisions. And then it gets even, you know, dicier as you go further into the next year because the other crops that are in the programs begin to get pulled into that really outdated policy.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned earlier that this, one of the reasons, and let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show, and we're speaking with Jonathan Kappes, who's a professor in agricultural and consumer economics at the U of I and director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program. We're talking about the Farm Bill, which has been expired for a little more than a month now, and wasn't a lot of forward progress, it seems, on negotiations as the House spent three of the last 4 weeks since then debating, well, I should say Republicans in the House spent debating that time who should be their leader. So now that Congress is back in session, we might begin to see some more movement on this, but there are some pretty stark divides. We get press releases. I got one from a state representative who's actually married to a member of Congress, you know, referring to sort of the myth of climate change, which, to be clear, is not a myth, but this is a talking point you see out there. And it's hard to imagine, you know, reckoning those, you know, where is the compromise? Where is the room for compromise when one side is, you know, taking such a strident position? And then obviously Democrats, you know, view this as an existential crisis for farmers. Do you see room for bridging those divides?
Well, it's really difficult. And you kind of get to the point, you know, we've had all these distractions or kind of roadblocks on the larger level with the House. So the speakership fight, before that, the potential for a government shutdown, before that, a debt ceiling debate and debacle. All those things have really made it difficult to get any progress on a farm bill. But even setting those aside, to your point, we are not seeing any progress being made, even at the committee level, where you typically get a lot of this worked out. And usually through that coalitional effort and on a bipartisan basis. But as you've noted, we've got some really big barriers to negotiating and reaching compromise around policy. Certainly one of them is over the spending and SNAP issues. And another one is over climate change and the investments, in particular investments the previous Congress made in farmers and in conservation or policies that help farmers do practices that improve soil health, that cut down soil erosion so we don't have the windstorms we saw this spring on I-55, that help improve water quality and may help sequester and store and reduce emissions of greenhouse gases. So they can be a contributor to the effort to combat and deal with climate change. And so there's a historic investment in 2022 for that. That has been a big topic of discussion and one of the blockers of getting any kind of consensus on what to do, in part because, as you mentioned, Republicans or some Republicans want to take that money and spend it elsewhere. Some just want to get rid of it because it has a climate change connection, although it's only part of what it does. I mean, it really does help farmers on the ground. It helps rural community drinking water, and it helps, again, with soil erosion and those sort of things. So it's a really large overstatement to say that it's all climate change and has to be eliminated. It is direct assistance to farmers and farm families and investments in farming and farmland that is important for a host of reasons, one of which is to help with climate change.
You know, there's a writer on Illinois politics named Rich Miller who has a saying about the state legislature here, which is always bet on nothing whenever something is really controversial, as in it's easier for politicians than to do nothing than to make those hard compromises. How likely would you rate that outcome, that we don't get a new farm bill, and maybe to make it specific by, let's say, by January 1st?
Well, I don't think there's any way we get a new farm bill by January 1st. I think what we're looking at right now is some form of extension of the existing farm bill. And that's pretty common. I mean, the last few farm bills that really got stuck in Congress or were slow to move, we did extensions on a pretty regular basis. So that's not really an unusual situation. What is unusual is whether this House can actually get to that kind of agreement, because, again, it's going to require bipartisanship. It's going to require the new speaker to get votes from the Democratic side of the aisle, because there is unlikely to be sufficient votes from the Republican caucus to extend, just like with the continuing resolution to fund the government. Those sort of things require a bipartisan set of votes, because you've got a split Congress and you've got a Democratic president. So you're not getting, the sole priorities of part of the Republican caucus into law.
Yeah, and maybe this is a conversation for a political science professor, but it strikes me that the last time we had, a Republican leader work with Democrats to avert a calamity in government, it was just a few months or a month ago to avoid the shutdown, and that speaker got sacked by his, or at least a small faction in his caucus, and that led to the 3-week fight. You're not inspiring a lot of optimism in me, I gotta say, for how likely this is to get done.
Yeah, I mean, optimism is tough to dig out of the news and the current situation. I would say that the optimistic pieces is we did avoid a debt ceiling debacle, we did avoid a government shutdown, but you're right, it comes at a cost if the Republican caucus in the House, and this is not being partisan, this is reality, if that caucus refuses to compromise on what it wants, and if it refuses to do the sort of thing that governing requires, and you made the comment about not getting anything done is the safe bet. I mean, that's really how the Congress was designed. It was designed to make it really difficult to do anything. And so because of that, you have to work through coalitions, you have to build vote counts to get through two chambers of Congress and to the president. So the challenge isn't that necessarily that it's tough to get through the process. The challenge is a single faction can't get everything at once exactly and 100%. They're going to have to cut deals and compromise. Otherwise, the votes are not there. And so the challenge is whether it's the farm bill or funding the government, the challenge is that no one group gets everything at once all the time completely. And so can this House of Representatives, can the majority caucus make that compromise and, work through a more bipartisan effort that garners votes from the other side of the aisle, as well as the other chamber of Congress. So it's difficult to see these things move unless they're willing to basically give a pass on a few of these tough issues and come back and fight another day for what they want, or to push, things in a direction they want without achieving it all in one fell swoop.
Interesting. I'm not sure. Well, we'll see what happens, I guess. I'll leave it at that. Just about a minute and a half left in our time together. I do want to ask, one of my colleagues mentioned he was hearing talk of a bumper crop this year. I don't even know if people still use that term. It sounds kind of biblical. I digress. What have you been hearing in terms of this year's harvest?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mix. I mean, we had a real drought, and that should reduce yields. Although, as you mentioned, driving around, as I drove around, I did not see, from the road. Now, that's a really limited perspective. You didn't see the kind of damage maybe we'd seen 10 or 11 years ago when we had a drought. So there's a question as to how much the drought impacted yields. I haven't seen final numbers, and I think we're a little ways away before we get any better indication. But I'm hearing sort of a mixed, some anecdotal, oh, it's been a great crop compared to the larger kind of perspective in which the yield numbers so far, the projections so far do not indicate a bumper crop, but do not indicate a really short or damaged or a drought damaged crop. So I don't know that we know the answer, or I know we don't know the answer yet. I don't have a better sense of where that might come out. And of course, that's going to impact everything from crop insurance assistance to crop prices and other payments. So it's a
Yeah.
lot to watch.
Well, we will keep watching it, and I hope we can have you back to talk about it, as I'm sure this story is going to continue for quite some time. Jonathan Kappes is director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program and associate professor in agricultural and consumer economics at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to talk to you again.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.